This is the Amp Hour Podcast, released December 3rd, 2017, episode 370, Alternate Info Sources.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Campbell of Contextual Electronics.
I hate new computers.
Yeah, man, you were going for a while there.
I feel so unproductive and frustrated.
Well, so what motivated the new computer?
It was like there were like a few things that I wanted that were only on like Windows 10 and stuff like that. So my editing machine was on Windows 7.
Oh.
And then I was doing this thing where I was changing my video cards out and it all crashed and did all sorts of stuff. So I thought, look, this will be the time to change to Windows 10.
Right.
And I actually found I hadn't been able to update to Windows 10 before because it wasn't compatible with my Dual Xeon motherboard. But I found a workaround for it. And I thought, okay, look, I'll give it another go. And it worked. It was like a flawless upgrade to Windows 10. No worries whatsoever. And then, of course, it was a complete from scratch. Like, because, you know, if you're going to do it, just do it
scratch. Yeah,
start from scratch. Nice, clean machine actually feels nice, right? But when you're, and I installed all new, so all my Handbrake scripts, which I use for my video transcoding, none of those work anymore. Well, that's because there's a, I guess I'm using the new version of Handbrake. I don't know. And all the command line options I had don't work anymore. So all my scripts are broken. And I downloaded a new version of Vegas, which is my video editing software, and it doesn't work. It's crashing all the time, and it's not compatible with my file formats.
Yep.
So I went back to my old version of Vegas 14.
So here's the real question. Did you keep the physical old computer, or is this on that same computer?
Oh, yeah. No, it's on the same computer. I just physically wiped the hard drive, nuked it.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know if I would have updated the whole computer, but at least keep the hard drive by itself. You could always go back and plug it back in.
Well, I've got a copy of the hard drive. I could go back, but I'm too far down the rabbit hole now, I think, to go back to Windows 7.
Yeah.
So I think I have to persist in,
right. I think I mentioned on the show before, but one of my old bosses used to talk about the best thing to do is to throw an entire laptop with the, with the charger, with all the licenses on that computer in a drawer with the project files.
Right.
Preserve the whole damn thing, freeze it in carbonite,
That's it. And then just boot the computer up in 10 years' time when you need to. Yep.
If you can, yep. That's the best case scenario. Yep.
All right. Anyway.
That's a hassle, man.
Yeah. But I think once you're down the rabbit hole, you can't go back. Like Windows 7 is like, it's good. It always worked. But I had issues with it, and I worked around them and, stuff like that. And I don't know. I just, anyway.
Yeah, I was getting a little long in the tooth, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So, I want to, because all my other machines are Windows 10 and I've had no dramas whatsoever, so.
Yeah, I think engineers specifically are very primed to be sensitive. You've honed your workflow, right? This could be a CAD thing as much as it is a video thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you move out of that workflow, you're going to be upset, right? At the very least, because it's you're less productive.
Exactly. So
speaking of less productive, I'm obviously, my voice is less productive today, so I apologize for my gravel voice. But, having nephews at a holiday. No, it was nephews at a holiday. I got sick, and then last night I was at a loud meetup and just kind of ran my voice ragged. Right. So it's the moneymaker, man.
Huh?
Yeah, exactly. Another pub.
Well, what's the moneymaker?
The voice. The voice is the moneymaker.
Earning the big bucks on the Amp Hour.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah really. Well, you do sound more of a radio voice.
I'm very.
I shot a video yesterday and I had the wind filter turned on my camera. I'm with my shotgun mic, and I went to edit my video, and like there is no bass, you know, like I don't like my voice is high pitched enough as it is, and it's like here it is just devoid of all bass, and it's just I sound like a chipmunk, you know. It's terrible. So anyway,
oh man. Well, how are things otherwise? What's new? You and I are pretty much on a pretty regular, like every other week. You've been so busy that like I've been doing the guest shows, and then you and I get back together, we hang out. So is the Kickstarter on path? Is that
the Kickstarter is there? All I got to do is push a button. Approved. It was approved. It took like 2 or 3 days to get
it. So by the time people are listening, then they might actually be there. So we will add a link. Well, it'll be Sunday, so like it's Wednesday. Problem. We record Wednesday here. Yeah. I usually record Sunday night, Sunday night. So,
but you want to know what happened, right? Sure. I think we mentioned this last time, right? I was getting 50 multimeters, right? They were making like it's not really a pre-production, it's like early production run of 50 meters, right? And I sold those, right? I put those on, like they said, oh yeah, like they're finished. We're about to put them on the truck. Like, you know, it was hours away from being on the truck or something. So I thought, oh yeah, I'll sell them, right? So I put them on my store and I released those to my backers and my patron supporters and stuff like that, which crashed my website.
Oh, that's nice, yeah.
Yeah, everyone just piled onto the web. Like, because I actually released it at a set time. Like, I told them what time I was going to release it, and here's the password. And, like, everyone tried to log on to my server, couldn't handle it. So,
hottest ticket in town, folks.
Yep.
And you missed out. Where can they sign up to be part of this group?
And then freaking WooCommerce failed. Yeah. WooCommerce, like I put like stock of 40 units on there, right? And it's like, so once stock reached zero, it's supposed to stop selling them. No, WooCommerce ended up selling 51 meters.
Oopsie.
Oopsie. And then sure enough, if you go Google search the problem, oh yeah, that's a known issue on WooCommerce. Yeah, thanks for that. Bloody hell. You can't win. So that's going to take me hours.
You're not a retailer, man. You're not a retailer.
That's going to take me hours to sort that shit out, you know.
Yeah.
Like, go and see who's...
So anyway. the production's on
anyway,
on path,
so, and then I got the email, right? So I sold all those, and I was about to release the Kickstarter and with dates promised. Like, I actually promised delivery in December, right? For the first, like, 400 people or something, right?
Cause
because the company's
this
promised
This is the holiday
me,
thing, right?
Yeah, right? Yeah. Everyone
we discussed
wants it
that
before
two weeks
yeah.
ago, right? Yep.
So they promised that they could deliver 500 units before Christmas. So to be on the safe side, I think I put 450 or something, 400 or something. Uh-huh. And and so I've promised a delivery deadline, but now they're still working on a last minute issue. They found a problem during calibration of the meters. They found that there was some mode that they could get into that caused it to go haywire or something, and they couldn't figure it out. So I think they were hoping to solve it and not tell me, but then they had to own up that, well, look, we don't know what's going on, and we've had to go back to the chipset manufacturer, as in the multimeter chipset, the Hicon multimeter chip. Uh-huh. And because we don't know what's going on inside the chip, like the modes, you know, are we setting up the registers right, all that sort of jazz, you know.
Oh, so this is there's a chip just for multimetering?
Yeah. There's like three or four manufacturers of multimeter chipsets, and almost every multimeter on the market uses one of these multimeter chipsets.
So it's how do they differentiate then?
Oh, features, you know.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this is for like the low end stuff, is that, or is that as you move up, you start to get more custom?
Yeah, but basically almost any handheld multimeter will use one of these multimeter chipsets, except for some of the real ultra high end ones, you know, like the $800 handheld multimeter.
Yeah, so it's a cost thing, right?
Yeah, yeah, yes, exactly. Right. So and it's all built in, like you don't have to design all that stuff because there's so much switching.
Yeah,
and,
right.
You know,
all the different
the
modes,
range
switches,
switching, the auto ranging, the ADCs, doing measuring capacitance, diode, continuity, resistance, voltage, current, all the, you know, like if you design that from scratch, that's a lot of.
Well, yeah, and that's what they used to put into the bench meters too, right? It's just more space and everything.
So So it's a world of hurt. And of course, so somebody's done all the hard, not even done all the hard work, but you can buy the chip for like a dollar, you know. So it's like, why wouldn't you, you know?
Right.
And so
that's a good
so
point then, about differentiation, yeah. though, too, right? Should you, you know, it might be worth it to differentiate, but you have to make sure that that high-end market's there. You obviously are trying to get, you know, a broad-based market in the first place, so of course it makes sense.
Well, I'm trying to keep costs low, of course.
Yeah,
we weren't going to design, we weren't going to roll our own, you know, analog front end and, you know, with all the switching and everything else. It's just madness to do it, you know. So, yeah, so it uses the same chip used inside the Keysight, you know, U1280 meter, which costs, you know, $600 or something.
Yeah,
you know,
right. But they have higher end resistors and other things.
They just use a better voltage. Actually, mine uses the same voltage reference. But yeah, they use, you know, laser trimmed hybrid resistors and, you know, stuff like that actually around. So the chip is the, you know, is the core of it. And then you put your more accurate components, more expensive components around the outside.
Yeah.
And,
yes. Test equipment differentiation.
Yeah.
All to please people just like yourself.
So I don't know whether or not to take a chance and just release the Kickstarter, push a button and actually release it, and then hope they can still deliver in December, or wait for them to come back and solve this problem. And but it's in theory, it should only be like a firmware issue, right?
Uh-huh.
But because it involves the calibration of the metal, like they found it during calibration, so it's like, you know, it's some obscure mode. They were, I don't know, someone was playing around with the buttons, and I don't know, it got
I guess that kind of we had talked about OTA in the past too. So is that the kind of thing where it would not be updatable over OTA?
OTA?
Sorry, over the air updates, or I guess it would be SD card.
Oh well, I've got a micro SD card. Oh yeah. No. Any firmware issue I can fix with the SD card update.
Huh. So the only real risk is
inside
if it's
the bootloader, right? Yes.
Oh, okay.
The only risk is if it's in the hardware.
Okay.
Yes.
So if it's in the hardware, that's a true risk. But otherwise,
yeah.
I mean, I think the bigger thing is more what you're getting at is just the expectation stuff, right?
Yeah, it's like I don't want to promise December delivery because that's tight. I mean, it's December like tomorrow, right? Here,
well,
it's November
for you,
30th,
yeah.
Right? It's December tomorrow, shit. And
yeah, that's really tight, man.
I know. But they said that they can...
Where did you get that from in the first place? That's why I don't get...
What, the
like,
date?
Do people really care about Christmas or no?
Oh, right, yeah, apparently they do. I get messages all the time. Come on, release it. I want it by Christmas. I want, because they're buying themselves a Christmas present. They just want it. People are in the consumer, you know, buying mode. And they just want.
Could you just give them a coupon that's good for a multimeter?
Yeah, coupon and IOU.
Right. IOU one multimeter.
You are buying an IOU, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is basically what a Kickstarter is.
That's
pretty
true.
Much,
that's a good point, yeah.
You know, pretty much all it is. Anyway. So, yeah. Yeah,
well,
I didn't bother polishing the Kickstarter. It's like the video is shit.
No, but nobody expected that, Dave. Come on.
Yeah, no. There's no spit and polish in this at all.
No. You're not going for outsiders. You're going for insiders.
No, exactly. Yeah. And
really, at this point, you probably could have just sold it all on your site. Like,
I could have. Well, Mike from Mike's Electric Stuff took me to task about this on the forum. He said, look, paraphrasing, but, you know, why bother with Kickstarter when if you're not going for the consumer, you know, audience?
That's a great question, Mike. So, Dave, what did you say?
It is, and it's because there are benefits.
Hubris, that is the answer.
To doing this.
Hubris is the answer. Dave wants to say, I've got another Kickstarter.
Psychology is the answer.
Yeah, hubris was the right answer.
Yeah. We will have to have a psychologist on the show because...
Oh, God, no.
I've been following a lot of psychology stuff recently.
Really?
I've been watching quite a few psychology videos, and they're fascinating.
What about? Like human nature
just
stuff?
Human, you know, people's, yeah.
Well, tell me. Tell me more. I'm a student of human nature.
Anyway, the psychology of crowdfunding campaigns is very, very different to just releasing it on the website. It's like, releasing it on the website, there's no sense of urgency. There's no sense of, I've got to have it, you know, because, it's on the shop, big deal. I can always buy it later, you know.
Right.
But now it's, you know, it's just not the same.
Okay, yeah, no, that's true.
Yeah,
and I've read about that in the past,
and people
too.
Love to follow what they've bought into, right?
Right.
People just
love
to follow
it. I think you're right about that, where that people... like if they like there's a lot of loss aversion, right? So if they think that they're going to miss out, and in this case they are missing out.
They're missing out on a pre-sale, you know, look, it's
right. Yeah. And like being the first to have it. Not to mention you have a crowd that's already
And at a cheaper price, of course. But it's not the same as putting it on your website at a sale price.
Yeah.
You know, because people say, oh, it'll just come on sale again in the future. I won't bother. Yeah. You know, I don't need it now. But yeah, crowdfunders are very different from that aspect. And also there's other advantages from the logistical side of things, the way it handles, the way you get the information, the databases and things like that. So logistically, when you're suddenly get, you know, 5,000 orders or something, it's much easier to manage if it's not on your shopping cart than, you know, because they give it to you as an Excel database. They get, you know, the names and addresses and everything else and the way you contact people. It's all managed logistically much better. And unless you've dealt with this sort of stuff before, it's hard to understand the advantages of that sort of thing. So, yeah, but good. You just have to say,
hey man,
trust
if you're
me
make, if you're make, yeah, exactly. If you're making the choice, it's up to you anyways, right?
Or for 5%, right? You can say, why do it? They charge 5%, right? But I'm happy to pay 5% for those advantages. You know, so, yep.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, that's
good.
The point.
Good. Mm. Consider the matter closed.
Matter closed, yes. Anyway. Mm. Yeah, it could be a complete flop. I don't know. I got no idea.
Cool.
You we'll guess find you out. Don't know until you. Yep.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, you just got to go prototype it, right?
Anyway, should I take a chance? Should I just release it and if I don't meet the deadline, who cares? It's Kickstarter, right? No one meets their deadline.
I personally wouldn't, but whatever. Right. I'm not. I also have another Kickstarter, so who cares? Right.
I'm proud of the fact that last time, my last Kickstarter, I shipped on the exact day the money came through.
Yep.
Like, I reckon I'm the only one to ever do that. I'm claiming it now.
Sure.
You know. Yep. Anyway. Yeah, I just don't like promising shit and not actually delivering. That sucks. Although I do it all the time. Oh, yeah, I'll review this scope, you know, and I never get around to it. Yeah.
Cool. Well, what's outside the Kickstarter realm? How about the electronics realm?
The electronics realm, I have to get back to, we're working on the micro supply at the moment. I might do some videos very shortly about doing a custom LCD and things like that. And there's a lot of people who said they would like to see a video on that. So we might do that as a multi-part series because we haven't got the custom LCD yet, but we've actually designed it. So I might do like a part one video now. And it's like, here's what goes into speccing a custom LCD.
Right.
And then wait for part two to see if we get, you know, duds or, you know, whether or not the quality, you know, the LCDs we get back are shit or not. So,
right. I had known that you were doing that. And I threw your name into that Hackaday journal as a potential writer for that.
But you don't expect me to produce content for other people, do you?
No, of course not. But I still threw your name in.
Yeah.
Yeah. An interesting idea. It's kind of like it's a new journal for people. It's a Hackaday thing. They announced that at SuperCon, but I don't think I mentioned it. So
right.
It's kind of like, we actually never mentioned it here, but the POC or GTFO, that's actually a thing from Travis Goodspeed. Did I ever mention it here? No?
I think you have. It rings
or maybe
a bell.
I mentioned it to you when I was talking about this other journal idea. But it's just basically like a journal. So like Mike Osman's a contributor to that too, I think. And it's people doing research. It's kind of like these research journals for people that don't have research journals kind of thing.
Right.
So it's like for the security community. And what it stands for is proof of concept or get the heck out.
Right.
In so many words. And it's really cool too because they just, people may have seen a version of it where they printed it to look like a Bible pretty much. And so back during DEF CON, there a couple of people were reading from it, like up on a soapbox.
Like sermons.
Yeah, sermons, exactly.
Yeah, right.
Yep. It was great. Yeah, great. So that's a cool book. And it's like people doing, you know, they're doing legitimate research, but maybe not for an institution. And where do you put it then? You know, you could post it to a blog, but it, like you were saying, you know.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I'm like publishing stuff, mm-hmm. right? Like I said, you don't expect me to actually publish for other people when I have my own publishing.
Sure. You have a
platform.
Channel, but most people don't.
I have a channel. Most people don't have a channel. And that got me thinking, like, what would, under what circumstances would I go to the effort to actually produce material for someone or something? And it would be, probably for like a conference. Like if, mm-hmm. If I was giving a talk at a conference,
sure. yep.
like that would be, because it's a different, medium. Like I'm not just going to produce, go to all the work and effort to produce material to be published on someone else's text blog, for example.
Right.
It's yep. just like, yeah, I don't want to say text blogs are dead. They're certainly not, but like it's not.
It's just the noise has gone up a lot.
It doesn't excite me, like whereas, giving a presentation or something, hey, that's interesting, and it's something I could film and put on my channel and,
yeah, right.
and stuff like that. So,
That makes sense.
Yeah. So would I, that's the thing. Would I, like, cause I got my start writing articles for the electronics magazines, right? Back when...
Yes, but it's not like... That's not the same environment as it used to be, right? That used to be the only way to get info.
Not. Yeah, and, no, it's... Yeah, but
and now
that
there's
was,
literally unlimited ways to get info about this stuff.
Right. But I probably wouldn't write another magazine article again, right? Because I don't... Because I
right.
have...
Because step one, who reads magazines?
Well, there are better platforms,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, right. Yep.
Including my own, of course,
Of
so,
course. Oh, yeah, yes. well...
Well, no, I've got to determine what to spend my time on.
Sure.
No,
I think that, and that also points to it from the other side too, is like, how are people getting their info these days, right? Because it's always tough to find out about new things.
Mm.
Like, for instance, I was handed a board a couple weeks ago. With
a
an
board?
ESP,
a PCB, right?
PCB, sorry. Yeah. With ESP chip on it, right?
Yeah.
And it was just a whole new platform, and I was so excited about it, and then I found it online, and then I posted it to our subreddit. It was out like a month. It was out back in August. It's not like
right.
it was not new, but it was new to me,
yeah,
and so
yeah.
it's kind of like it's almost a question of what are people reading these days or checking out. Like Twitter flies by so quick, and it's so noisy, anyways.
Oh, you can't. Yeah,
LinkedIn
yeah.
is a pile of crap, and Facebook's yeah. a pile of crap, and Reddit's good, but it's only so it's only so much stuff. Everything just slides past your feed these days,
uh-huh.
and so it's tough to keep up.
Yeah, you can't.
YouTube's great, actually. YouTube subscriptions is one of my favorites. But
yep.
if I rely on people like you, well.
Sucker.
Yeah, well. Actually, so I didn't want to mention that ESP thing. So they have a new module. Where can I even find it? Because I actually deleted that post.
yet another flavor of...
So it's an ESP32, but the really interesting thing is that antenna, and I've never seen this kind of antenna before, and I'm sure it's not new, but basically, how like there's a lot of PCB antennas with like the squiggly Wi-Fi?
Yeah.
It looks like kind of like our maze back and forth, like a serpentine. It's an F, yeah.
It is a fractal, and most likely a fractal antenna.
Right. And so this one, though, it basically does that in metal, but then it folds it up and over. And so just the footprint is much, much smaller because of that.
What do you mean folds it up and over? It's a physical antenna? It's a physical wire
so
antenna?
Yeah, it mounts into the board, but then it comes up in 3D space.
Ah.
So
it mounts into the like a cutout in the board, or is it like a surface mount part that...
No, it is. It mounts into the board. It's a physically separate thing that then mounts into the board.
Right.
Yes. And I wish I would have posted this sooner. But anyways, I will find a post and send it to you. So basically what happens, though, is if you're going to be doing, a lot of people are doing modules, right? Modules are all the rage these days. But if you're going to be doing it from scratch and just putting down the chipset and then certifying it later, you can basically shrink that footprint down significantly, right?
Yes,
so the module is bigger because it has, power regulation on there. It's got other stuff on there. I think oscillator, stuff like that. But if you're going to do it yourself, you want to you're probably doing it to minimize space anyways. So, yeah. So this antenna helps with that.
Got it. I need a photo. Sorry.
I know. I was going to say at this point, it might be easier for me to just go get the board and send you a picture, but.
Yeah.
yeah. I'll
oh,
find
boy.
It. Yeah.
All right.
Yep. So it's cool though. Yeah, I got to, who was it? So I got to hang out with Jeroen, who was, we've had on the show, and then Angus as well. So Angus is another software engineer for Espressif. So
got it.
Got to hang out with them a couple weeks ago. And yeah, that stuff's everywhere, man. It's crazy. It's really crazy.
You want to know what's crazy?
What's crazy?
More layoffs.
More layoffs. Yeah, what's going on with layoffs? I didn't think we had that many layoffs, but I suppose this is...
Well, no, I don't know. I'm just trying to get out of the...
Just segueing it, yeah. Just,
yep, right. Getting into some relevant news.
Sure.
Autodesk. Bye-bye 1,150 employees. They're
out of 9,000.
Which is at least 10%. Out of 9,000, yeah. So it's more than 10% of the company. But interestingly, they say this has got nothing to do with... this is not a financial... minimization, you know, this is not a cost-cutting scheme.
Sure.
And our finance and where our earnings are great, you know, they're pleased with their earnings and it's like, well, okay, they're restructuring.
Yeah, we're pleased with their earnings and that's why we're going to get more of them by not having as many people working on software.
And they say, they make the remarkable thing that they're moving towards cloud based stuff. I thought they'd already like cloud based licensing, and I thought they were already a almost 100% cloud based licensed company. Am I wrong?
I don't know 100%, but I think it's pretty close. I imagine the firms that are using Autodesk still, like AutoCAD, right, being like, hey, remember that software that you're using, AutoCAD 2000 or whatever? It's in the cloud now. Okay.
I got on my Twitter feed the other day, there was a blog post from Altium about, it was a poll or something. Do you prefer cloud-based licenses or the perpetual licenses? So I didn't read the whole thing, but they're obviously, are they fishing?
It. They all see it as a way to get more money and, you know, to have better control and to push out more versions. And like, this is the new reality, right? People are going to get pushed back against it. But the answer to that survey, which is stupid to even ask, is if people don't have a choice, they're going to do it, right? That's what Adobe proved, is like there's no other choice for a lot of people.
They
griped about it, but they did it, and Autodesk did the same thing, and Altium will probably eventually do the same thing,
right?
So yeah, when you don't have a choice, it's the choice. So
wonderful.
I don't know, I think it's I'm not a huge fan of it, but it's the choice.
Yeah.
And if it also allows things like Fusion 360, you know, people don't like Fusion 360 either, but you know what? It's the choice for me. So whatever. Work on open source. Open source 3D CAD still sucks. Some people say open source ECAD sucks too. I get it, but whatever.
Okay.
He says while wearing his KiCad hat.
Yep. Yeah. How's all that KiCad? Not KiCad. KiCad.
KiCad's going good, man. Yeah. It's going real good. I don't know.
Are they still, like, are at the point where there's, like, one official point, one official download? Like,
it's been like that for a while.
Someone who's, like,
Yeah, it's called the stable build. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and people can do that. You could do that if you ever actually, you know. Right. Wanted to transition. Yeah. You're not going to do it, though. We know that. So let's just skip that entirely. Yeah, it's good. I mean, you know, I don't know if we mentioned a couple weeks ago, DigiKey started contributing to. They have their own library.
Yeah,
on GitHub
they did
now.
A big library dump thing.
Yeah,
I think I'm pretty sure we mentioned that, didn't we?
Maybe. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, huge library dump.
What was it? 15 days ago? Yeah, we probably mentioned it. And that's great. I mean, like, that kind of stuff is going to keep pushing it forwards. You know, should you trust the DigiKey library any more than... I mean, I don't trust my own goddamn libraries these days, you know?
Yeah, right. Well,
I pin swapped.
It's a starting point, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like if you can pull that part in and you get a library for it, great, you know? But just, I mean, check it. You can either trust it implicitly or simply do a quick... check, you know, or you can tweak it or whatnot, but at least you get something. It's better than like having nothing at all, getting zippity doodah.
Right, exactly. And I think that really stuff like that, what that does is it kind of just opens up the possibility. Like a lot of people, so like people coming to Eagle, right? A lot of the libraries are built in, which is great. But it's just like, once you then realize, like, so people using Eagle as well, they realize that they can go out and find other libraries and implement them, right? And that's I think, one of the strengths of Eagle is that they had a lot of community-generated libraries.
Right.
Altium has that sort of, some of it's vendor-contributed, but really it's a lot of the built-in libraries are nice and managed, and that's a lot of what you're paying for. So, yeah, I think it's just more about realizing there's more out there and then kind of going out and selectively and having a, you know, people that are doing layout, you just need to be rigorous about it. You need to have like a way to go through and check stuff and check it against the data sheet. And you're going to get burned either way. It's just kind of pick your poison. So make sure you check. I mean, hell, like I said, I got burned. I got burned myself the other day. So
right.
Yeah. Oh, cool. I was bitching about Twitter. I bet that on Twitter, actually. Why, and maybe you know this. Why? I think they answered on Twitter, but why do they do bottom view footprints?
Who does bottom view footprints?
Well, apparently the SOT 523 vendor that I was using.
Right.
I've seen on relays before as well. And so I've gotten burned every time it burns me.
Oh, in the data sheet you're talking about, in a bottom view.
They do the pin out in the data
That's
sheet.
That's very common for pinned, like a through hole pin parts, yes. Right. Yes.
So why does that exist? I think I got the answer.
That exists back to the old magazine days. We're talking about the magazines, right? If you go look at the the magazines from the 60s and the 70s, when everything was through hole, of course, and it was like they would give you like a little 3D drawing of the pins sticking out of the metal can, you know, the TO5 transistor can, right? Uh-huh. And the pins sticking out. They give you that 3D pattern. So you're looking at the pins from the bottom, effectively, and they would always do the bottom view. It's like almost, it was practically an industry standard, was bottom view pinouts for transit for those type of packages. It was different for except dip packages. They were always top view, but anything where the pins actually stuck out the bottom, like transistor cans, it was always bottom view. If those pins were hidden when you put the component on the board, then they'd show the bottom view.
Okay, great.
Footprint. And it just stems from, I reckon it's just a historical carryover from that.
Right. Okay, so I've heard that one. I've heard because when you're doing transparencies for old layouts that it was better to do it like that. I've heard it because when you're holding the pin in your hand, then that's the view you're looking at, right?
It's bottom view. That's the view you're looking at. Yeah, that's kind of what I'm talking about, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
What else was the answers? This is a great discussion on Twitter. This is why I love Twitter. Right. People throwing in there. Yeah. So doing transparencies for etching, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so now the real question, though, and this is what I'm really getting at.
Right.
It's 2017. Why the hell are we doing bottom view for SOT 523? Like, this is like, I could snort
not
SOT 523.
SOT package. Yeah, no.
SOT
that's...
523. Do you know how small that is? Like, there is zero reason to do a bottom view. Or, as I said online, why not just fine. You want to show a bottom view? Fine. There is no space constraints. Put the friggin' top view right next to it. Like, what the hell?
For a component that has pins coming out the side that you can see from the top, there is no point.
Exactly. Right. And, I know I've been complaining about this everywhere, right? Because it's my mistake. And I, you know, requiem, right? I get it. Like, this is Chris's mistake and I've had to deal with it and it's fine. But, you know, as an honest discussion, why the hell does this exist? And do both. Do a 3D view. Like, there's no space constraint. There's no data books anymore. Just make your data sheet longer. I can spare the extra kilobytes of download. You know what I mean? Right. Ways to get Chris worked up is, you know, So, anyways, check your footprints. Yep. Same old story, but yep.
Yeah.
So to back to the original, KiCad's going okay. I think there's a 5.0 version in the works and 5.0 will be like the schematic editor gets changed. And, you know, subsequently, like you said, with your computer, people are going to be pissed.
As in the look and feel, the GUI, everything.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Major.
But for the right reasons. I mean, like...
Right, okay.
Yeah, they're switching over to OpenGL and stuff like that, and I'm sure that's going to happen for the schematic stuff, too.
Right.
And, like, so, like, I don't know how you do your library stuff for other.
I don't. See, I don't do enough work to warrant.
Oh, okay.
You know, like a comprehensive library, like keeping it anymore. It's just.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So the thing that I push back against when it happened in the 4.0 version is that there's well, and I guess it's kind of atomic, right? That's what the article from DigiKey is about. But basically, you know, each footprint, so like a SOT23 footprint is its own file, right? And it's in a directory, and the directory is the library, quote unquote. And you can add a library, or you could just drag and drop, you know, footprints individually. And I just I've really come to like that. And that's not how they all do it. And even on the front end stuff for the schematic symbols, those are all just like a library listing.
Yep.
And so they're going to transition that, I believe, to atomic, like each schematic symbol is now its own file. And then you can, you know, drag and drop. And so just from a file standpoint, right? So thinking about like revision control, that makes a lot of sense, right?
Altium went down that path of individual files for everything, and it just didn't work.
Oh, really?
Why not? Yeah, then they went back to database. It was just a mess.
Well, I really like it for the revision control aspect. You know, right. Using GitHub, seeing, oh, I added a new footprint and a new schematic symbol into my libraries. Now I know it's there, right? That kind of stuff of like a tracking. I'd rather like that, because otherwise, what it looks like is, you know, in GitHub it shows, oh, well, your library file grew from, you know, 2,000 characters to 2,100 characters, and it's like, okay, well, now I can go look at that code, blah blah blah, instead of just seeing the file name changed. So. Yeah, I'm sure there's lots of arguments for and against, and I don't really care. Mm-hmm. But I like that on the footprint side, so I'm excited about the symbols.
Got it.
Good segue here, actually. FOSDEM is happening. So there's actually a CAD room, and it's not just KiCad. So FOSDEM is the free and open source development, blah, blah, blah. Basically, it's it's in Europe, and it's a conference for open source stuff and open hardware. And they have a room for CAD, and that's great. Right. So there's going to be KiCad people there. Usually all the developers go. So if people are interested, let's see where it is.
I didn't know there was such a thing.
Yeah.
There you go.
It is in February 3rd and 4th in Brussels. I think it was in Brussels last year as well.
So will you be going?
I will not be going. Maybe I'll go. I don't know. February is a good time to get to Brussels, I'm sure. Right. It's a good time to get the hell out of the Midwest, I'll tell you that.
Right.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that's a good time. I think, actually, this does warrant other discussions, though. So I just signed up for Tor Camp. I'll be going to that. And I started planning out my other stuff. I think I might be going to PyCon this year, and I'll be going to CES in January. But I think the real thing to think about, I always forget, and then Alicia and Chris usually mention on Embedded, it's a good time to just start looking at, if you're like interested in going to conferences, it's almost like they're already starting to close call for proposals. And I think I think for PyCon, I think it's already closed. So, So it's a good time for people to start looking. I was thinking about 2019 already. I was actually talking to Angus, the Espressif developer I mentioned, but I talked to him about maybe going to the LinuxCon down in Melbourne in 2019.
Yep.
Yeah, because it's too late. It's too late for 2018. So, hey, man, got to come back and see you. You're sure as hell not coming to the States.
If it's Melbourne, we'll meet up and
hang out. And also, it's a great time to go to, you know, Southern Hemisphere. Although I'm sure it's a little. Is it warm? It's probably warm there, right? It's getting warm.
Yeah, it's warm. Of course it is. Summertime. It's so weird. It's summertime so weird. Tomorrow. It's summer tomorrow.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wait, is your time changing too, or just the?
No. Our time's already changed. That was month or two back.
Okay.
Yep.
Cool.
Yep. Summer tomorrow.
Okay.
Woot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Dave is disappearing in January for a vacation. So
yeah, I'm
summer
off.
Vacation. Yeah. Man.
Let me have your opinion on this. I'm thinking about, like, because I suck at producing like pre-canned content that I release later. It's not how I work.
Oh, like while you're on vacation.
Yeah, while I'm on vacation, and then release the videos while I'm away. I just kind of suck at it. And this is common on other YouTube channels, is that they will invite guest content producers on their channel.
Yeah.
While
the Vlogbrothers
away.
Do that a lot. And I've actually found out new channels like
many
that.
Channels I watch do it. Yeah, it seems popular on all these other channels. And I always said that I wouldn't... like have other people's content on my channel. Like, I discussed it, like, you know, way back, right at the start of the blog, and like, should I post? And it didn't seem like a good idea. And I still don't think it's a necessarily idea, but it seems popular.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you've had people on there too when you're on it, right?
As in interviews and stuff.
Yeah, like interviews. Different. I've been on your channel, right? I mean,
yeah.
Like,
yeah, but that's kind of different. You know, it's not the same as somebody else is producing the content. Although I have been doing that recently. David has been producing some content. And, you know, so yeah, I think it's a great idea. I might give it a try. So
you could also like pre-record a couple like snippets about what you want them to talk about and like have it play on a monitor, like Max Headroom style.
No.
No, is that not going to work?
No. Yeah. Okay. No, I don't think that's going to work. Anyway, so you think that's not a bad idea?
I think it's actually great because it is, like I said, how I found out about a lot of other channels. Mm. And, you know, it shakes things up. I mean, some people are going to hate it, but who cares?
Right. Yeah, of course.
And I think, like I was just reading, Colin Furze just did a AMA yesterday.
Right.
And he was talking about the other channels he's worked with and then he likes. And yeah, I mean, like, it's just natural, right? YouTubers know other YouTubers. So.
Yep, of course.
It's just you're further away than most. Mm. Otherwise, you would already hung out with, you know, other YouTubers. So.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I'll limit it to, like, smaller channels, like under, like, 10,000 subs or something. Sure. You know, like that. Because, like, if there's no point highlighting, like, Mike from Mike's Electric stuff or something. You know, everyone knows
it is, right? Have Mike do a thing. You know, that's fun.
Right.
Have Mike put on his best Dave impression.
Yeah. But I can imagine, like, because there's a list on the EEV blog forum of electronic bloggers.
I've seen
right?
that, yeah.
Have you seen how big it is?
Yeah, yeah.
There's hundreds of them.
Yeah.
So imagine, and most of them are small, right? There's only, like, what, wouldn't even be a dozen big ones, right?
Right, yeah.
So, well, there's only so much. Yeah. Right. And so there are all these smaller channels, which is fantastic. And like, imagine if I put a call out, you know, and I suddenly get inundated with, you know, 20 or 30 different people who want to make a video on my channel. Like, I can't have like 20 or 30. I've got to have like maybe four, yeah, maybe, you know, like, not
how long you're gonna be away, man.
Yeah, exactly. And like, but no, I can't. Maybe I could have one per day, but that'd be like too much. Like, it'd be
maybe, yeah,
you know, so like, there's going to be a lot of disappointed people. So it's
I think if you prompt people, you tell them about it, they're gonna be fine. So
right.
I think and that is a good list of, you know, if people are looking for other content out there, there's a lot of people making good stuff.
Yeah, so that's why I want to limit it to the smaller players to give them a chance to, you know, advertise their channel and stuff, you know.
Yep.
So
cool, that's great, man.
Yep. And then we'll split the huge advertising revenue that we get from that.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, $100, you know, I'll split it with you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. The big bucks, yes. Anyway, okay, so that's good. Okay, I might go ahead with that. I might do the announcement video and get people to send
right.
in there.
And we'll have our usual shows around here too, I'm sure. Like, well,
and the good thing is people will go to the effort to produce this content, right? And I'll want to see the content before I choose, right?
Sure.
So, but if I don't pick it, at least they can release the content on their channel.
I will post a link to that list too. Like I said, it's a good list.
Yeah, it's great. Because there's so many, you know. Like, I just found another one the other night. Like, people producing all this great content.
Oh,
it's absolutely amazing.
So, you know? I had an interesting experience last night. So, I was at a meetup. Obviously, that's how I lost my voice. And I met, I re-met someone that I had met already who was really bright, doing a startup near here in Chicago. And he said something. He didn't know who I was, and that's fine. That's great.
Yeah.
But then he figured out that, you know, I'm half of the amp hour. He said,
right.
He said the following to me, Dave. He said,
Am I going to like this?
I don't think so. He said, I listened to the Amp Hour and EEV blog growing up.
Growing up.
I'm like, how old are you?
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Oh, I'm sure.
Well, it's been eight and a half years.
Right? Yeah, 8.5 for you, 7 for the Amp Hour. I mean, yeah, exactly, right? So some people that started listening in the beginning, if they were, you know, like, that's great. That's freaking killer. I love it. But made me feel a little
it'll,
old.
It'll
too.
Be like, it'll, before I know it, it'll be like a decade.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you man. Know, that's serious business.
Yeah. You're getting old, man.
No kidding.
Oh, man.
Yep.
Well, yeah.
Anyway. There's another contest.
Yes, this is a fun one. We here on the Amp Hour.
I might enter this. We were just talking about this before.
Well, it is another constraint based contest.
They're always the best. They're always the best. You can't beat those.
Right. So this is the Coin Cell Challenge. Hackaday's doing this one. They also did the one square inch contest or something.
Yeah.
They're still pretty open, right? But But I like the constraints. The blinking light competition. Blinking light prize. That's going to happen again in 2018, I saw. So.
Oh, okay, cool. Who won that? I didn't follow up.
I actually didn't see. That's the point, though. It doesn't matter, right?
It doesn't matter.
It's all in the fun videos, right? And those videos are super fun. So, again, we've talked about that before, but it's great to go check that out. 2017 blinking light prize. I think they won a total of 200 pounds.
right. Oh, yes, that's right. It was like a trivial prize, right. But that's not the point.
Yep. Exactly. And like, you know, engineers love...
isn't always fortune and glory. Sometimes it's only the glory.
Right. Yeah, no fortune. Yeah. So, this is a good one. I think this is getting you... Well, I can't give away what you might do, but...
That was just the first thing. Because, like, as soon as I saw it, I went, oh, that's the first thing that popped into my head was... And I told you about that before the show. But, I think we might enter.
Cool. Get some... rapid prototyping going on, huh?
Hmm.
Yeah. It's tough. It's tough rapid prototyping. Getting that.
What
getting
is the prize?
I didn't even see that. Prizes. Top 20 prizes get a $100 credit to the Tindy store and $500 for the top for a lifetime for the actual full winners, right? So.
Come on, Hackaday. They got more money than that.
Yeah, they gave it all away already. Cool.
Groovy.
Well, speaking of people with lots of money, Amazon's big in the IoT space, right? So they're like really getting into that stuff, and they have some really compelling product stuff. My friend told me about Greengrass is like a edge computing thing, and they've got their whole IoT stack.
What's an edge computing thing?
So it'd be like say you wanted to stream. Data from a sensor, but you needed to do some signal processing. You didn't want to stream all the data, right? So you have a temperature sensor that's saying,
right, and you want to take the average 78, 78, 78, 78,
right? And you only want to know when it changes. So you do some computing. You say, oh, well, it's gone up by 1 degree. And you just send back it's gone up by 1 degree, and then on the server side, you already know that it was at 78, now it's 79, that kind of thing. So
it's called temporal compression.
Ooh. Well, but not necessarily. It's basically the idea is that you could do temporal compression, but you could also do signal processing on it otherwise, right? So
you're right.
That's the idea, is just pushing it out so you don't transmit as much data.
Exactly.
So that's one of the things they do. But they also have like their whole, you know, they can set up servers, and honestly, I don't get any of it. I'm really slacking on the. I still don't get all this IoT crap, Dave. I know I'm supposed to work on it now, but. The interesting thing that they just announced that might be of interest to our listeners is they have their own flavor of free RTOS. So,
I don't get this. Like, is it a fork? Because free RTOS is an open source.
In the name, right?
Right. Yeah. So have they forked it, or are they just putting money behind it, like a KiCad kind of? Like money and resources behind it, like a KiCad kind of thing, or what's like?
So if I had to guess, and I don't really know, I mean, I don't think they're changing it that much, but if they have a branded version, it'd probably be like a Red Hat to a Debian type thing, right? Or sorry, is that even right?
Fedora? Right, it's their own flavor.
So you have the support behind it, you have all the developers internally that are working on it, but then they also contribute back to the open source
to the community, to the kernel, so to speak.
Amazon Free RTOS extends the free RTOS kernel, a popular blah, 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 with libraries to enable local and cloud connectivity. So basically, they're taking an open source project. The benefit to the community is, you know, this happens a lot of places.
They're integrating support for their Amazon Web Services into the kernel. That's basically what they're doing.
Yep. Yeah. And that's very clever. The benefit to the general public is you get get more people working on it. The downside is if you're a competitor, well... Sorry.
You're screwed.
Yeah. So
I've been saying that for years. It's like, you will not.
Right. So Free RTOS has been around for a while. You know, it's really interesting if you read, I remember Jack Gansel who's been on the show. He always did surveys of people in the embedded world. And like, it was always shocking to me. And I think Michael Barr does this too. Always shocking to me how many people do custom RTOSes? And it's like,
right.
Again, the word hubris comes to mind of like, is it because you just, you don't want to pay for it or you think you can do it better or I don't know, but it was a significant chunk, like 40 to 50% were homegrown.
David was just saying that the other day. It was like, you know, he was complaining about the firmware in the multimeter. It's because they're not running an RTOS. And it's like, we can just create a thing with threads and, you know, blah, blah, you know.
This is how hardware people hear firmware people, folks. If you're a firmware person listening,
you sound
like the mom in Charlie Brown, like, wah, 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 RTOS.
And that's how it ends up. Like, people just end up rolling their own, you know?
Right, and that works great at the beginning.
People like David just go, well, look, this is easy. I'm going to do it. And then 3 months down the rabbit hole there, you know? Yep.
Yeah, yep. And it's like, it's not the beginning that's hard. It's the continuing support 4 years down the line. That's the hard part. Right. Or integrating, you know, each new thing is not is not using someone else's code. It's now you have to go and figure out how to integrate it into your code base and... You know, with all apologies to, I know nothing of which I speak, but you know what I mean? Like, it's just, you don't have as much other people helping you because you're now, you're in the Wild West, you're doing your own thing. So,
got it.
Good luck. interesting. You know, a lot of times I see these kind of like, these kind of like sponsored solutions like this. And the things they always push is like, oh, well, we've got, you know, TI on board, ST on board, there's a bunch of boards that are existing, and that's great, right? So if you're using that thing, especially for like a proof of concept, it's awesome. However, you know, now if you want to go, if you've got a custom board, you got to do something else outside of this, you're almost in a greenfield space anyways, right? You got to go then figure out how the Amazon RTOS is different, and you got to integrate it. Like, the whole benefit of any of these things is usually if you're using a pre-selected solution, it's killer, right? You've got a head start. It's using a dev kit. It's using anything like that.
Yep.
If you want to, you know, integrate your one special thing or use that really unique processor, well, good luck. It just sucks, right? I mean, it's tough, right? So like they list like the, predefined NXP is the LPC 54018 IoT module, right? If you want to use the 54017, I don't know if that even exists.
Right.
You might have a bad day, right?
Right.
It's a better starting place than, you know, some vendor that's not supported at all, but it's all these different levels of, it's almost like a false sense of security. And, and it's really problematic. So I don't know if you've had this before, but like, you know, so you're doing a proof of concept, you buy a development board or you're given one or whatever, it looks great, you show it to your boss, they're like, awesome, go forwards, right? And then either the buyer comes back and says, too expensive, you have to use this part, or or one of your other people says, well, no, I really need, you know, that extended memory, and now it's a totally different part. And it's like, well, can I go show that to the boss? Because I need an extra 6 months now. Yeah, so it's... this is great. Just be careful, folks. You know, if you're gonna buy in, buy all the way in. But also the other thing to keep an eye out for, as you know, as the resident cheapskate here, although I think Dave's a cheapskate too, probably.
Yeah, totally.
As all hardware people are, is, you know, like, even if you do go all the way through, you use their full solution, they're gonna charge you on the back end. They're gonna get you somehow. There's a reason they made this thing. So just, you know. They want you to use the data, whatever, you know, it's just, that's how it works.
Well, that's their entire business.
They want you to pay, they don't care about the hardware, they want you to pay for the servers for the next 10 years, right?
Exactly.
Or not, right? So, we have a, what was that, there was a link here, where'd it go? An Internet of Things flop means that, or did we talk about that last week? No, we didn't talk about it. Internet of Things flop means some connected lights won't work anymore. So another, you know, another failure. I heard Macrofab is poaching from our list again. Parker, I see you out there. I see you. No, I told him he could. So basically, this was also discussed on the Macrofab podcast. But basically, this was a Kickstarter. Did really well, $350,000 worth of stuff, $300,000. And now they're all dead. Womp womp.
Womp womp womp.
Yeah. We talked about this 2 weeks ago with the MQTT internally versus externally stuff. But yeah, this is just another device that's bricked because of, we could have a you know, a segment of the show that does this.
Stop it, people. Just stop it.
Yeah, stop. Well, yeah. Oh, well. So, yeah.
We're too addicted to this stuff. Like, it's just... I tweeted this yesterday.
Was it?
It's that I think I'm the only person at my gym who doesn't take a mobile phone.
Oh, I hate mobile phones.
With them.
I know, they're so heavy. And they put them on their arm and they think they're like... And then, like, you get sweat all over them and...
They're in there doing like a class. They're in there with a group class, and like during changes in the tracks, they're checking their phone. Like, Jesus, can't you just leave it down in the locker for an hour?
Right.
I mean,
what are you really gonna miss if they need to get you? They're calling the gym, right?
Exactly. You know, if you
it's true.
It's just unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, that's okay, Dave. We can be, you know, we know that you're somewhat of a Luddite, and I obviously, you know, I have a job now that's kind of connected, but like, you know,
right.
Yeah, I get
right.
it. Yeah. Let's see, what else is on our list? Silicon is unforgiving. Have you heard about this? Silicon is unforgiving.
No.
You didn't see this link? Oh, that's great. It's like the head of the VP, was it VP? No, chief, the chip chief, Johnny Tsurugi, sorry about your name. Basically, he's saying that, like, yeah, if you mess up Silicon, you're really screwed. but everybody's doing
media.
It anyways, right?
Right.
Right. Well, that's what I said. I was like, oh, duh, right? But, like, yeah. So, basically, though, it's like, you know, Apple has, everything's moving on chip, right? But it's for multiple reasons, you know, like for optimizing, for power and everything else. But I think he's basically saying, Watch out for the pitfalls, but what are you going to do?
Right? Imagine the people, imagine being the person who screws up the latest, you know,
iPhone chipset.
$10 million iPhone chipset.
I can't even imagine doing it not for Apple. You imagine doing it for anyone. Like,
anyone.
We need to
revise
that, you know, that mask set.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, we confused NPN with PNPs, like they're using those on modern things, but yeah.
We're a week away from product launch, and it doesn't work quite well.
Yeah.
Man, yep.
Let's see what else is on the list. I don't know. I don't know how much people care about this stuff. AI chips, nothing.
No,
you know,
we don't.
That, I guess that adheres to the rule on here of until you can buy it in DigiKey, it doesn't exist.
Right, yep.
Yep. There's the new Tesla electric semi truck again.
No,
if there is DigiKey for trucks, call us when it exists.
I potentially want to look into this because my spidey sense tells me this is a bit of more, it might be a dog and pony show.
Well,
smoke and mirrors kind of thing.
Literally, because the event is a dog and pony show, right?
Yeah, I mean, right. Like, well, it
up
is
up on
right.
stage
yeah.
and like,
yeah, true.
And now introducing the truck. And wait, there's one more thing. And screw
smoke
you,
and
man.
Mirrors, because I believe they have deliberately left out, or like the charging solutions and like any detailed discussion of that sort of stuff. Because
I totally think about that too. Yep.
Yeah. Because, like, just the sheer, like, the range and the weight of these things, and the batteries have to weigh more than a previous truck, right, to get the job done. And then charging them and put it, like, you need, like, a megawatt hour
right.
You know? You
need I thought about that, too. So you know, the power transfer, right? So we've talked about that before.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think we talked about it when they were talking about, like, a many, many car charging supercharging station, right?
It's bad enough with like small cars like the Model S and the Model 3, right?
Right.
This
and
is
now,
a truck
now you're just
with...
dumping. Yeah, so they say like you get 80% recharge in 30 minutes or something like that. So if you just do the math on how big the battery capacity is to get a 500-mile range, right? And then it's like how much power you have to dump back into it. And then obviously the connectors would have to be super, 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 super low in low resistance.
Well, no, it's got to be super high voltage to avoid... To deliver, like, you know, it's still going to be like 500 amps or something,
right.
but it's going to have to be like
power.
10 kilovolts or something.
Right.
Yeah, it's going
to... But then you look at the power, like, and that's the main thing. It's like,
exactly.
You're pretty much going to have like a substation at each of these rechargers. Because if you have more than one truck there, you start to get some serious draw, right?
Yeah, I don't... Yeah.
Right.
I'm all for electric cars and renewable technology, but I am against impractical, you know, bullshit. Right. Yeah. Well, it's not bullshit. It's just that if this turns out to be impractical,
it's a logistical nightmare. How about that?
It's a logistical, impractical nightmare. Like, I haven't run the numbers. I'll be honest, but my spidey sense tells me that it's not going to be pretty. And
I would agree with your tingle.
right. Yeah. So that might make an interesting video just to run some. Surely somebody's done it. Somebody out there's
run
the
numbers. There's a lot
numbers,
of focus on this stuff. And it's not just Tesla's doing this either, right? Yeah. So, I mean, there's other people doing it. But I think, you know, the things that are compelling about it are the cost, right? The, you know, if you actually, you know, so first off, you know, there's this fancy schmancy looking truck cab, which is not hitting your target market correctly, but whatever. You know, but if you have a fancy schmancy truck cab, it doesn't matter.
I like the truck cab. I
mean, it's
awesome.
Nice, but I mean, you're dealing with a demographic that is like prides itself on like gruff and, you know, like,
right.
They, you know, they wear belt buckles with Mac on it. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
So I'm just saying it misses the mark from the actual user, but like, who cares if you're going to save that much money? You know, they'd ride around in like, you know, they'd ride on
a they're not going to be complaining,
right?
Though. Right. I think once they did a trip in this, they wouldn't be complaining.
No. I'm saying
that
if it actually hits these costs that they're talking about, that,
of course,
then everything else falls apart, right?
Oh,
if they actually hit those costs and they can actually deliver the vehicles, then And that's really, that's the story to me. But like you, the power stuff is... That's the huge question mark.
It's the showstopper. Like, it could be a potential showstopper. It may not be doable.
Can you imagine just pulling up next to a semi-truck, though, and then, like, at a light, and then you just, like, there's no sound as it gets up.
Yeah, exactly. You expect,
That would be insane.
That would be freaky. Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's where all the noise comes from, is, like, when it's low gear, right?
Yeah. Thunderfoot did a video on this just the other day. Not on this, but he was, like, debunking the new battery. Like, the guy, I forget the guy's name, but the guy who invented the lithium-ion battery, right? He's basically come out and made some bold claims that I've invented this new tech.
Oh, we talked about that. The solid sodium battery, right?
Is it? Is it? Yeah, something like that. Anyway, it's 10 times the energy density.
Yeah.
And he basically went through the basic chemistry of, you know, how much energy density is inside, you know, fuel and all that sort of stuff. And it's basically we're pretty much at the limit of what you can kind of do in battery tech. Like, you know, we might, you know, there's no way you're going to get an order of magnitude increase in energy density inside batteries.
Right. Well, yeah, it's linear growth for batteries, although it's doing well. I mean, like, the growth of batteries is doing well.
It has, but there comes a point due to...
Yeah, don't expect silicon levels
chemistry
of
and, you know,
right.
No.
Right.
It's, you know...
yeah, it's like about crowding of the the anodes and stuff like that.
So, anyway, I'm not a chemistry, you
me
know.
Me neither,
Right? I won't pretend to understand the chemistry, but I think his points were valid in that, you know, look, this is bullshit. You're not going to get this order of magnitude increase. And I think that's, like, this stuff like the Tesla truck may potentially be impractical because of the inherent limits in battery technology.
Yeah. One of my college buddies just went back and he's getting a master's or a PhD in battery stuff. He might be able to introduce me to people if people are interested in getting battery experts or people know battery experts. I mean they're sure as hell not going away anytime soon. So
No.
We'd love to hear from you.
I can ask
I can ask my buddy too and try and get someone on here. So I think there's a lot of secrecy around that field, though, because, like, when you really think about it,
but
there's no, like, firmware. There's no, like, all you really have is the chemistry and the manufacturing of it.
Yeah.
So it's not like someone from the Gigafactory is going to come on here, the Tesla Gigafactory.
But
like,
no one's doing leaps and bounds. It's just not happening.
Right. And so this Thunderfoot video, I think it's about the 94-year-old inventor guy, right? So he was like at UT Austin.
Oh, is he that old?
He's really old. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
So I think his name's on the paper though, and like, but then he.
Right. Okay.
So I mean, I think he had a part of it too.
He didn't. Right. But
he's 94.
They might be using his name. Okay. Right.
That's conjecture from me, and I'm to be yelled at if that's the case.
And of course, everyone took it as gospel, right? Oh, it's the inventor of the lithium ion battery. It must be true.
Dude, no, this guy is, he's legit, right?
Totally.
But,
totally.
But it's an academic thing of like first author, second author type stuff too, right? Of like,
yeah, yeah, of course.
You lead with the big name, no matter what.
Of course you do. Of course you do.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, but no, every idea stands on its merit. There, you know, it's science is a merit-based, you know, proof-based system, right? It's not, no, there's no, your expert credentials only get you so far.
Right.
Right?
Well, eventually.
It doesn't make it practical.
They can get you pretty far, pretty long, but yeah.
Yeah. They can get you funding for a long time, but it's not going to get you something that works, right? Yeah. If your idea is inherently flawed.
That's right. Yep.
So, you know.
Yeah. So this is actually, this is John, really? That's his name?
John?
John Goodenough? Is that real?
John Goodenough. Yes, that's it. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's his name. Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to make fun of his name, but
yeah,
come on.
It's a great engineering name.
I know.
Good enough is freaking
he's an engineer,
awesome. It's practically
not a scientist,
the definition
right?
of exactly. It's the definition of well, oh, no, man. He's a, I think he's a physicist or something.
Oh, okay.
Isn't he a physical chemistry
or
something?
No, they do credit. They credit the senior research fellow Maria Helena Braga. So, so maybe she would be the one we talk to. All solid state battery. Okay, so we will try to get someone on here.
Right.
And I'm sure
anyway,
that's what Thunderfoot was talking
about.
I
suspect it's bullshit, yeah. I don't think we're going to see a tenfold increase in battery tech in terms of energy density and
yeah,
stuff like that.
That's a bold-ass claim, especially like manufacturable in scale, right? I mean, look how long it's taken just to get scale manufacturing of you know, lithium-ion stuff.
Yeah.
So, and it was sodium, right?
What is lithium-ion today? What is it, 20% better than what it was a decade ago?
Yeah,
like you know,
it's
not
better
like,
for sure, but it's not like
yeah, it's better,
not,
but it's
like
not,
it's not silicon better, right? That's what we're used to in the technology world.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah. So, let's see, it says sodium, lithium, or potassium as the alkali metal anode, and I did ask my buddy Mark about this too. He had some questions about it. So,
right.
But hey, whatever. Let's bring it on. I want better batteries. Batteries, you know, energy storage is like
of course.
A
no,
huge
I totally want this truck thing to work. Yeah.
Right,
but
and that would you know, and so like we talked about with the you know having a substation at a truck stop also would work is a large battery bank, right? So then you charge it slowly over time, and then you discharge it quickly into a big truck, which is another battery, right? And so that's another way you could do it, but still a shitload of power. So,
anyway.
Cool. Anything else on the list?
No.
AI.
We're done.
Guy that launched his.
Yeah, some dude's
rocket.
Made his own rocket, and he's going to prove the Earth is flat. Good on
you. Yeah,
yeah.
I did like this interview. The title thing was, it sure would be great to have three LEDs in this thing, but they're 2 cents each, so we have to take one out. It's an interview with a toy designer. And so we've had Todd on the show before, and Alicia's a toy designer, and
that's great, Jerry.
And then, oh, Jerry too, right? Yeah, and it's just it's a whole other world that you and I have no idea about.
Yeah, I know.
But
I can imagine.
Yeah, that's. Yeah. I don't think I know the challenge is there, but the output is just like so plasticky and weird, you know.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's a hell of a constraint. I will say
that's where you need John Goodenough.
Yeah,
someone last name Goodenough.
I think
you need
perfect
enough.
It
just has to be Goodenough.
John Perfect. Oh, you mean like that? I see.
Yeah. Right. Because you can't do engineering perfect in a consumer toy product.
So John Goodenough is the QA person.
Yeah, right.
John Goodenough is okay with a 10% fall off.
Right.
Yep.
Love it.
Cool, man.
That's it.
Yeah. Well. I look forward to seeing other people's content on your channel for holidays.
Cool.
I'm sure we'll be back next week with another interview, and then I think we'll sneak one more in with Dave before the end of the year.
Groovy.
Yeah, man.
Catch you next time.
See ya.